The Athletic.
The throw for Gordon. Just try to keep it in on the line. Cut it back for Longstaff, who scores. Sean Longstaff left footed from Anthony Gordon's cutback has given them an early lead at Bramall Lane. Another chance for Newcastle. Whipped in this time. Dan Byrne! Kick on the right, 20 yards from goal. Trippier.
Into the net!
And for the first time, Sven Botman has scored. And it is such a simple header and a simple goal. But three goals for United, who are completely in control. Space for Cher. He slipped it through. Trippier's in, and Callum Wilson, here he is, and this time Wilson hits the back of the net. It's Gordon, left corner of the area, hit it inside. He's going to hit it this time. Oh, Anthony Gordon, that is a lovely goal. 62 minutes played, it's 5-0. Bruno through, Almiron's in. With a chance to run. It's come back for Longstaff. It's come to Bruno! And Bruno makes it seven. Oh, Isak from a header back from a defender is in. Isak's beaten at one and then taken it around Fotheringham and put it into the back of the net. And Isak, with his third of the season, just made it look so easy. It's Sheffield United 0, Newcastle United.
Oh, drink it in. How good does that feel? Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne. And what a week it's been. Not content with picking up a point in Italy. Newcastle United went to Sheffield yesterday and they put the blades to the sword. Chris Woff is here. How the devil are you, Chris Woff?
I see what you've done there with the put the blades to the sword. Yeah, enjoy that very much. I enjoyed that more than listening to the 8 goals again, really. Yeah, just the... obviously I didn't listen. I watched it on TV, so to hear the radio commentary to hear and I'm going to have to watch back the fourth goal because I don't remember who should have hit it for the Wilson goal, but Cher should have hit it. I don't remember that being a sort of me sitting there thinking, oh, he needs to unleash one, but I'm going to look back and see that. But no, great to hear, and you can just hear the disbelief in the commentary, as I'm sure. But even more so in the press box where Jacob was yesterday. But what an absolutely phenomenal and ruthless performance from Newcastle United.
Superb. Jacob Whitehead's here as well. How the devil are you, Jacob?
I am well. I really enjoyed watching you rubbing your hands during the replay of those 8 goals, like sort of a malevolent Victorian schoolmaster. It's quite ominous. Terrifying expression of joy. Imagine sort of Jason Tindall might go for that.
Just drinking it in, mate. Just drinking it in and enjoying it. Lovely stuff. I forgot to mention as well, actually, on the podcast the other week when I was on. Andor was at one of my gigs. I did a gig in the town centre and Andor was there. And he stood down the front singing along to Teenage Dirtbag, which I didn't think he ever would.
That wouldn't be the first... When you say John Anderson, tough-tackling 1980s Newcastle United defender, I wouldn't have said straight away that Teenage Dirtbag would have been his tune. But who knew? Who knew?
Does he sort of dance how players used to celebrate back then, that sort of spring up in the air, dead straight?
I know what you mean, yeah.
Or, yeah, too, is it much more sensible?
No, he was just kind of stood, chilled with his pint of Guinness, just taking it easy, you know. He seemed to be having a good time, though, so that was good. And then I had a chat with him, obviously didn't have a fucking clue who I was, but that's fine. But there you go. But it was nice to meet him. Anyway, 8-0, Chris Woff. 8-0. 8 brackets, the letters that spell 8, close brackets, 0. Unbelievable.
Very much so. And yet again, I have been proven to be absolutely useless at my job. Seen as last Thursday on the podcast, I did say that I thought this could be a difficult outing for Newcastle United.
Potential banana skin.
And before the match, I'll be honest, I thought that a draw wouldn't have been an absolutely terrible result. But in my defence, I don't think I was alone in that. Obviously, this was the first time that we saw how Newcastle United would respond to having a midweek Champions League away game. came back from Milan, only arrived in the early hours of Wednesday morning, and then they managed to go. And this was, what was bizarre was for the first 10 minutes, you couldn't have seen this unfolding either. I didn't think, I mean, Sheffield United started okay and actually probably could and should have been ahead with a couple of opportunities that they had. But we really saw Newcastle United click again, and messaging some people in the dressing room, one sort of message that came back was that they were pleased about that they used the word freedom that Newcastle United played with. And I think that we haven't seen that in the last few weeks, particularly on the ball. They've looked a bit too formulaic. They've looked like they're lacking a little bit of confidence in what they're trying to do. And yet on Sunday, what did we see was a Newcastle side who weren't content with just winning the match. They wanted to win it and score as many goals as possible. And really, it could and should have been more than 8, which sounds astonishing to say. But they were absolutely phenomenal. Sheffield United were abysmal. Newcastle United made them abysmal as well. They contribute to that. And a lot of teams are poor, but they don't go and put 8 past opposition. And to do it at Bramall Lane, they've never conceded anywhere near that at home, Sheffield United, in their entire history. And Newcastle United thoroughly, thoroughly deserve that 8 Gouda win.
I mean, Jacob, if you'd not watched the game live and you'd just caught the score afterwards, you would have thought Newcastle United were playing with a ball each, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it was dead weird. I mean, like Chris just said, I mean, Luke Thomas had 2 really good chances where Newcastle weren't picking up either fullback kind of for the first 20 minutes. And there was me thinking, you know, it's kind of, there's some mental lapses here. This isn't great. And then that Gordon got, well, I say the Gordon goal, the goal Gordon was involved in for Longstaff just kicked it all up. I don't know what you guys made of that, because it's one where it looks like a handball. You feel like it should be a handball, but by the letter of the law, and Newcastle have obviously been stung by this a few times over the last couple of years, it's a perfectly legal goal for Longstaff to sweep in.
Yeah, there's an element of good fortune, Chris, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the law's a bit of an ass, because I think in the cool light of day, he has gained an advantage by the ball hitting his hand. And a couple of years ago, I know when they first sort of brought in VAR, that probably would have been disallowed. And they've changed it now so that it has to be it's the goal scorer themselves if it hits their hand. But I mean, he is the assist provider. He does very, very well to keep it in, but he sort of inadvertently hits it with his arm. But basically that helps him, but the fact that it hits his arm. Regardless, that is the rule. He had kept it in. Sheffield United thought he hadn't, and he pulls it back, and Sean Longstaff finishes it off. So Newcastle United capitalised on that, and to have gained the confidence that they did from it, and for Sheffield United to have capitulated in the manner they did, that was from. It wasn't like it was the 89th minute and suddenly the game was gone. It was just weird how the two sides went in such different ways after that goal and the fortune maybe that Newcastle had.
I think also when, for the corner for the second goal, deflection of Cher off his arm. Now, this one probably wasn't a handball. His arm was glued to his body, but it still did hit the arm and go out. You can see why the fans might have felt aggrieved, why the team might have felt aggrieved. They've had some really nasty decisions go against them this year. And as soon as it's 2-0, you feel like the fates are conspiring against you. It really did mean that their confidence absolutely plummeted.
Absolutely, and the set plays, for once, the set plays worked, didn't it, Chris? Newcastle don't score a lot of goals from set plays, but they were on the money this time.
I'm not sure I entirely agree. I know there's been a lot of comments about Newcastle don't score a lot from set pieces. I mean, they did score 10 last season, which was middle of the road in the Premier League, but they did also have the most opportunities from corners. Their XG from set pieces was huge. The Kieran Trippier has not been the issue, really. I know a lot of people, I've had this debate with a lot of people, a lot of Newcastle fans I know, last season was saying someone else should take them. Really, Newcastle haven't converted the opportunities from set pieces that they could and should have done. And that was what was different at Sheffield United, was that Dan Byrne and Sven Botman, each last season, probably should have had 3 or 4 goals from set pieces, which they didn't take. And they took both of those opportunities. So, I mean, the deliveries for both were phenomenal, as was Trippier's for Wilson's, which I know we'll get onto a bit. But that was open play, but it was essentially like a set piece the way that he delivers it. And he is vital for Newcastle United. We keep saying this, and I think, again, that's almost reinforced why maybe they wanted another right back, because if Kieran Trippier gets injured, Newcastle lose a huge amount, and they brought Livramento on for the last sort of 20 minutes or so, protect Kieran Trippier a little bit. He's played a heck of a lot of football. But for Newcastle to both have the routines which they use, they also had one which was slightly unfortunate when Almiron came short and his shot wasn't particularly very good, but that led to the actual subsequent corner which brought Byrne's goal. But the desire that Dan Byrne showed, to even though he's having his shirt basically pulled off his back, still got their back post diving header. And then Sven Botman, the little sort of just flick, just using the pace and the whip on the ball from Kieran Trippier for the third to just nod it nod it beyond Fodringham to far corner. Yeah, very, very good. Ruthlessly efficient. I mean, the first goal also was from a actually was from a throw-in before Gordon got to the touchline as well. So three goals really from sort of set player situations.
So absolutely over the moon for Sven Botman to get himself on the score sheet and open his Newcastle account. And he was audibly delighted afterwards as well.
Hi fans, amazing day today. Happy with my goal as well. 8-0. We continue and focus on the City game, but thank you for the support. See you.
Wow, he sounds like you had to peel him off the ceiling there, Chris, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I know he's been receiving a lot of stick from other Newcastle players because this was his 50th appearance for Newcastle, I believe, and he still hadn't scored and had those opportunities I mentioned earlier. I messaged some people close to Botman as well, and they were basically saying, "Oh, it's about time he finally got that goal." I mean, as Jacob said sort of last week on the podcast, what a player he is for Newcastle United, though. I mean, in those opening exchanges, when maybe Newcastle hadn't quite got a grip of the game yet, there was just a few touches he had, a couple of headers down, a couple of passes in the midfield, where he just calms the situation. It seems like Newcastle might be under pressure and he sort of calms the situation a little bit. And if he can add goals, and really he should be able to add goals because of the set-piece delivery Newcastle have, and because of his... He's one of those players, certainly first half of last season after he arrived, when Newcastle put the ball in the box, he always seemed to be able to get on the end of it, whether that was to head it back to someone else or to win a header towards goal, but obviously hasn't actually capitalised by getting the necessary goals and assists that maybe he would like. But yeah, absolutely delighted for him, and I think his teammates were as well. So.
Absolutely, it was lovely to see. 3-0 at half-time, Jacob, but it seems like management were behind a deliberate move to be as relentless as possible, leading to the mayhem of that second period. And if Callum Wilson had his proper shooting boots on, you imagine we could have made it a double figures.
Actually, I think I started my piece this morning talking about Jason Tindall sending on a note to Sean Longstaff with Newcastle already 7-0 up, which at the time felt slightly cruel to Sheffield United. Sort of saw Longstaff's eyes sort of received it and they bulge, like it was kind of shocked. It was like someone had asked for him to like mallet a hamster or something. He was like, this is cruel. And then Isak went and scored moments later. It's just getting this kind of killer mentality into them. It's a slightly different situation because they're already 3-0 up, but against Liverpool, they failed to go on and kill the game when they had a lead to really kind of assert themselves. Again, it's slightly different here, but it's part of just we go, we do our jobs, we do our processes. And here they did that, but with that creativity, which Chris spoke about earlier, it was such a professional performance.
Ruthless, wasn't it, Chris? And Anthony Gordon was fantastic from the minute he came on till the end of the game, and a great strike and a good reward for his man of the match performance.
Yeah, I mean, he really injected a bit of energy into the Newcastle side, and maybe that seemed a bit uncertain, but he came on and he gave his opposite number an absolutely torrid afternoon. Obviously created the first goal, albeit slightly fortuitous in terms of the ball hitting his hand, but he'd shown the desire to get to the byline and then be able to keep it in and then have the wherewithal to pull it back to Sean Longstaff. We've obviously not talked about Callum Wilson really so far, but he couldn't should have had a hat-trick possibly even first half. He gets the fourth goal from that Trippier cross I mentioned earlier, and then Anthony Gordon cuts in from the left-hand side. Got Elliot Anderson gives him an option short. That attracts a defender. Dan Byrne then sort of does like an almost an underlapping run beyond, and that drags another defender. And Gordon just uses the space and curls it just beautifully from the left-hand side of the box into the bottom right-hand corner. And exactly what his performance deserved, because he really was the difference. And really feel for Harvey Barnes, obviously gone off injured, toe injury. Sounds like might be a little bit of time before we see him again. He was one of the big signs of the summer. But Anthony Gordon just keeps going from strength to strength. And after the huge shift he's put in the last couple of matches to have produced that performance, having come on only 10-15 minutes at the game, I think it was huge credit to him.
What was nice to see about that Gordon performance was that it directly addressed some of the concerns there have been about his game. End product and link-up play have been things he's struggled with. He created three different chances for Callum Wilson in the first half. End product-wise, he had a goal, he had the assists, could have had those assists to Wilson. And the goal's really interesting because this is the goal which he almost relied a lot upon during his junior career. Everton's youth teams would play him out on the left, he'd drift in, he'd try and curl it. And against those junior teams, they couldn't handle it. He moved up to senior level and almost kept trying it, and it wouldn't work. And he didn't actually manage to do that kind of... Because, I mean, it's a stunning goal to look at. He'd not actually managed to do that until now at senior level. It's a really nice sign that he's adding different bits to his game and then returning to this.
Just picking up on that, actually on his NUFC TV interview after the game, Anthony Gordon mentioned that he'd been working specifically with Jason Tindall on the training ground on this exact goal. He said that it too often he hadn't been cutting in as he can do as historically, and he knew was one of his strengths. And this was the exact move he'd been practicing. And obviously, as he said himself, practice made perfect, and just kept Newcastle just going in that ruthless fashion that they found.
Just for a second there, I thought you were going to say he'd been working on his tan with Jason Tindall on the training ground.
Oh, he's got a heck of a long way to go. He's got a heck of a long way to catch up on that front.
I mean, he's practically transparent, isn't he? He could get sunstroke looking at a holder brochure, that lad, bless him. But yeah, good man to learn from, though, Jason Tindall. Miggy as well, though. Miggy Almiron, Jacob, being very Miggy Almiron, wasn't he? A great team goal. Nice ball by Bruno, but you could have landed a 7-4-7 in that gap that Sheffield United left, and I think that was pretty much a theme of the day, wasn't
Completely.
it?
Completely. I mean, he'd already had one disallowed. He sorted out his feet really well for his goal. Like, it's kind of...
Lovely finish.
Looked as if quite easily it could have been one of those really awkward ones where, I mean, if it had been me playing, it would have whacked off my back heel and sort of pinballed off to Tom Davis. But no, he's a nice step over, finished really, really calmly, because sometimes he can slightly snatch at those chances and just rolled it.
That was the goal that I think felt embarrassing for the game, because as much as you say, the movement from Almiron and the desire to get there was great, the little interplay with Bruno Guimaraes, but it was just such a simple give and go, and he just ran into a huge space, as you mentioned, in the middle of the back line, and that was where he just looked at it and thought, this Sheffield United team really are not up for it right now. Even at that level, that is not acceptable for a team. And Newcastle ruthlessly efficient and went and finished the chance, and that brilliant, because some of their teams may have stepped off a little bit, but that one was just like, yeah, you'd almost see with some of the players. Yeah, it was absolutely laughable, yeah.
I mean, the standard of defending and just the general play from Sheffield United was pretty poor. We've spoke about how good Newcastle were, but the gaps were just all over the place in the midfield. Some of the back passes and some of the misplaced passes in that midfield, one of them which led to the goal that Bruno scored. Beautiful first touch. He's had a fantastic week for him as well. His son Pietro has arrived and he signed a new deal as well, Chris. It's been a huge week for Bruno, hasn't it? It was nice to see him kind of looking a bit like the Bruno of old again, playing with a little bit of confidence, a couple of nutmegs, a couple of little drag backs and stuff like that. It was nice to see
that. I mean, I don't know if he's actually signed it. He's close to signing. I think they've agreed the new deal. I don't know if he's actually signed it yet.
Right.
But there was a gesture from some Newcastle fans were suggesting who were there that he basically said, "I'm staying," after he celebrated with the ball under his shirt to signify the arrival of his second child. But I thought that early on there were a couple of misplaced passes and I thought, not sure about this from Bruno Guimaraes. But as the game grew on, he was excellent and he completely ran it from midfield. I mean, as you mentioned, Sheffield United gave him the run of the midfield because it was just puzzling. They didn't really play a midfield. It was really odd, their system. And the gaps that Elliot Anderson, who I thought was very, very good as well, found in that midfield in particular, just coming deep into... And even there was that opportunity that Miguel Almiron had where he received the ball on halfway in acres of space and somehow didn't create a chance from it because he dallied on the ball a little bit as he was on the half turn, and that was just very, very odd in terms of the way that they approach it. For Bruno Guimaraes, again, obviously Sandro Tonali came on later on, but Bruno Guimaraes performed well without Sandro Tonali in that midfield alongside him, and that in itself was interesting. And when Tonali came on, he played sort of as a number six at times. So whether Eddie Howe is still trying to find a way of getting those two into the same side together and blend together, that's maybe me looking a little bit too much into this. But yeah, Bruno Guimaraes, really second half in particular, back to his very best.
Did you ever do the ball under the shirt celebration, Chris, when you returned to five a side a few months back?
I still haven't scored since I returned, so I couldn't have done.
that's going to come out in a few months' time. What are you doing that for? Never on the way.
Right. And Geordie Boyce were, let's be honest, taking the piss, and so was Alexander Isak when he went through to make it 8-0, Chris. Sat the defender on his arse, didn't he? And then, I mean, it was almost like the keeper just went, go on then, just put it in, you might as well. Yeah, here now, you've done the hard bit.
Well, Tom Davis came on, and I actually thought, to begin with, he'd added a little bit of something to Sheffield United. He got on the ball, he tried to make things happen, and then he just managed to... head the ball directly into Alexander Isak's path, who'd come on. You could see he was desperate. He was not leaving that pitch without scoring a goal. He'd already, in the build-up to Bruno Guimaraes, was actually Isak had run through, and he probably should have passed it earlier, but seemed determined to get a shot away, and then deflected twice and ended up with Bruno. But yeah, that we've seen Isak do that so many times. He is coolness personified in the box, and sat down the defender, just kills it past Fodringham. And yeah, at that stage, there was 3 or 4 minutes of normal time remaining, but it was like 10 minutes of injury time. So I was very much thinking this could still be 10, and maybe it should have been 10. That's not to, in any way, put a dampener on Newcastle United's 8-0 victory, but it could and should have been double figures, really.
Yeah, it should have. Yeah.
Just on Geordie boys taking the piss, my sister was actually working at the game as a paramedic, and she was in the little room under the away end where people were brought in for treatment. And her review of the Newcastle away end, so she works between Bramall Lane and Hillsborough, and her review of the Newcastle fans, they'd been the best all season and all evening. We'd try and watch the rugby highlights later on, and she was just singing, Callum Wilson, ooh. Ah, and she does not like football. She doesn't even really seem to like disco music, you know, from what I know. But yet, Newcastle fans seem to have such an effect on her that it's completely changed her personality.
Or was it Callum Wilson that had an effect on her? Or was it Callum
Well, she couldn't see him because she was sat in this room at the bottom. So it's pure, she probably couldn't tell him from Adam. She just sort of heard lore from above of this Callum Wilson figure.
That's fair enough. He's a legendary character. Newcastle, Chris, 8 goals. 8 goals, the biggest ever away win for the club. First Premier League team to have 8 goal scorers in one match. And we used 15 outfielders, so more of them scored than didn't, which is quite amazing, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It is astonishing. I mean, just the, when it kept on racking up and said, oh, 5 goals, 5 different goal scorers. And each time you're thinking, oh, someone's going to get it. I mean, Wilson should have had more than one, really. Gordon arguably could and should have done as well. But I mean, Newcastle had 15 shots on target, which I think is the most in the Premier League for 6 or 7 years. By half-time, Newcastle had their most shots ever on target in the first half of a Premier League match, which I think was 8. And I mean, their conversion rate of that is astonishing. They had 22 shots, 15 of them on target, which just that just showed the sort of ruthless efficiency that they had, and that really that actually were saying they were profligate, but really slightly unfortunate as well for a couple of them, weirdly.
I've never ever wanted to ask this question before, Chris, but what was the XG?
I think it was like 3.9, was it, Jacob? I think it was just under 4.
Wow.
Perfect, yeah. 3.94.
So actually, Newcastle, again, I mean, that's where the weird thing is it's like when we say about how bad Sheffield United were, but not, I don't think many teams, maybe Man City or maybe historically, the very, very best teams in the Premier League may have gone and put 8 past Sheffield United, but I don't think many teams would have done yesterday. And that, for a Newcastle side who was struggling so much in attack in the last few matches, or seemingly not quite Eddie Howe used the phrase himself before the match in his pre-match press conference, that we haven't quite clicked yet in the final third. Well, they certainly did click. Huge for the confidence boost. All of those players who've managed to get on the score sheet, many of them their first goal of the season, Miguel Almiron, Sean Longstaff, Bruno Guimaraes. You hope that that just brings more out of them going forward as well. Alexander Isak needed a goal, really.
Yeah, he did.
We spoke about it last week that really this could turn into a very, very good week for Newcastle United, and I think it was a sensational week by the end of it. And the point at AC Milan looks even better now in hindsight because of this, because Newcastle have built from it and shown that hopefully they can and do have the strength and depth to be able to perform on all accounts.
Absolutely. Newcastle had 8 league goals this season going into that game. They scored 8 more, and they are now 8th in the Premier League, Jacob.
Yep, that's number one.
That's a number, Wang. Indeed it is. Brilliant. Love that.
Don't need to say anything more. I mean, we are now just talking about numbers. But yeah, they're looking up. They're looking up. And just to kind of... Now there's been 2 wins on the trot, it just kind of puts everything in perspective, doesn't it? I mean, there's really that kind of air of panic after Brighton, or maybe not panic, but just sort of people are having a little bit of a reckoning and wondering, are Newcastle actually good this season? And considering a bit of levity back then, that they'd played these really strong teams and they'd actually come out with a similar record to those sides last season. Well, now they've beaten 2 other, you know, kind of poorer teams this year. Suddenly they're kind of back looking upwards. The next few games are all very winnable. So real chance, with the caveat that there are Champions League and cup competitions to try and, you know, kind of rotate in. but real chance for them to keep marching onwards and upwards.
This is it though, Chris, isn't it? Our quote-unquote awful start of the season now sees us 6 games in with 2 more points than we had after 6 games last season, having already played the current top three of City away, Brighton away, and obviously Liverpool as well, in a game that probably we should have won. It's numbers are not bad, are they, really?
No, they're not, but that's again why we were saying last week was so huge, because I think it was going to sort of shape how we saw the start of the season for Newcastle and maybe what we think is possible going forward. And if the week hadn't turned out well, then Newcastle could have been languishing in the bottom sort of 5 or 6, only 1 win up to this point, and haven't won in the Champions League either. And instead, you're looking at it and thinking they've got the league form a little bit back on track. They've got a very, very healthy goal difference now, and 2 back-to-back wins in the Premier League, 3 clean sheets in a week, which we haven't mentioned yet, but that is huge. That is what Newcastle United built so much of their strength on last season. And they've managed to get back-to-back clean sheets in the Premier League, clean sheets at the San Siro, and they now play a Man City side who really will probably be quite a makeshift team, albeit I'm sure any Man City side, regardless even if it's a youngsters, a makeshift side is very good. But at St James's Park, they will not fancy coming to St James's Park after an 8-0 victory for Newcastle United. And you look at the games to come in the Premier League, and they do look like fairly kind run of fixtures now after a difficult start, in terms of they played 5 very, very good. Well, certainly 4 of them very good. Brentford also a good side, and as 3 of the current top three, they are the 3 sides who are, Man City are probably going to win the Premier League again. Liverpool look very much set like they're going to be in the Champions League, and Brighton keep growing from strength to strength. So Newcastle have got those fixtures out of the way to a certain extent, albeit with no points, but they can now hopefully build and be ready for when they have the return fixtures against those sides.
And of course, Jacob, we've got to spare a thought for Harvey Barnes as well, haven't we? He went off after 10 minutes with an injury. Has there been any info about that?
Not a ton. Eddie Howe spoke about it after, just to confirm that it was a problem. He said that he pushed off and felt it. It's a toe issue. He confirmed there's an injury there, but as of all of these things, he'll be going for a scan. That'll probably be today. And then I'll get a further update for you probably around time of Manchester City match.
Fair play. And there was no women's game on Sunday either. That was postponed after the death of Maddie Cusack. Desperately sad to lose anyone at the age of 27, Jacob, but it sounds like she was a popular character.
Yeah, it was actually a really sad atmosphere at Bramall Lane before kickoff. Maddie used to work for Sheffield United in the marketing department, as well as being a player. She was well known in the media suite at Bramall Lane. And it was nice to see such an outpouring of love for her before the match. Sheffield United team all came out in her number 8 shirts. It was really touching, actually, how the applause almost started early and there was no real whistle to stop it. It just kind of carried on and carried on. Is that the England women's game too on Friday night in Sunderland, where there's also tributes to her? She was a former England age group international. And yeah, absolutely tragic to lose her at that age. Newcastle's game was also cancelled because some of the Newcastle players and also the Burnley players who had previously been teammates with her. The Nottingham Forest game was the other game in the league, which was also cancelled. Maddie formerly played for them. But that Newcastle-Burnley game, which was, as we previewed last time, it will be a top-of-the-table encounter that will be reorganised for later in the season. We'll let you know when that is.
Absolutely, and thoughts with Maddie's friends and family at the moment as well. Right, we're going to take a little break and we'll be back very, very soon to talk about that Man City game in the Carabao Cup. So Newcastle back in action in the Cup on Wednesday night with a visit from the current European and Premier League champions, Manchester City. A nice, easy return to Carabao action, Chris. Huh?
I still can't get Carabao action. Carabao. It's not a thing. It's League Cup. That's what it is.
Carabao.
It's the League Cup.
Chris, you were born in Carabao. The 90s like me. I don't still get how you're sort of feeling this kind of grumpy about the past.
Well, in a couple of years it'll probably be, I don't know, the Greggs Cup, and then I'm quite happy for it to be called the Greggs Cup, but I'm not.
It was the Littlewoods Cup when I was a kid. It was the Rumbelows Cup when I was a kid. It was the Coca-Cola Cup.
It'd be the Milk Cup.
It was the Worthington
Isn't
Cup.
Isn't the Milk Cup inherently more ridiculous?
Play for milk.
Than the Carabao. Oh, isn't that inherently more ridiculous than the Carabao Cup?
The whole thing is inherently ridiculous that it has a name of any of the sort of I mean, the fact that Carabao is barely even sold in this country is more of a... and by that, I mean the UK is also ridiculous. Anyway, we're getting totally off point, yes.
What do you most like? It's sort of second most cup competition in the UK trophy? Like, how literal do you want us to be?
Hey, it would have been the best if Newcastle had won it in February, let me tell
Absolutely.
You. But anyway, that didn't happen. Obviously, losing finalists to Manchester United last year, and Newcastle then get a home draw against Manchester City, who won it quite a few times under Pep Guardiola. But Guardiola himself has already said in basically the build-up to this game and previous press conferences that he doesn't have the players to be able to play a full-strength side because they've got so many injuries. I mean, nobody is going to... It's the smallest violin in the world for Pep Guardiola and his small squad. But I think there will be a sort of blend of some of Man City's youth players coming to the side. They have some very, very good youth players. There'll be a blend of that and also some of their starters. And Newcastle, I think, will rotate a little bit as well. Howe's been keen to reiterate that he's sort of been making 4 or 5 changes per game. He doesn't want to change the entire spine of the side. So I think that may be the case again. Tino Livramento could well make his full debut for Newcastle. Same with Lewis Hall. You would have thought they would be two natural sort of players to have come into the side after this, seeing as that Jacob Murphy may well come back in, having started in Milan and then on the bench at the weekend. You may get a change at goalkeeper and a couple of other positions. Paul Dummett may even get a run out, but I don't think it'll be sort of wholesale changes. I think maybe half the starting lineup will change a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see if Newcastle can build on the wonderful result at Bramall Lane and continue that momentum going into this League Cup match.
Hilarious gig for Paul Dummett, the fact that he sort of sits on the bench and then suddenly called upon to sort of play the best club team in the world over the last 5 years, and then off you, Todd Poole. Cheers. Thanks for your service.
Thanks for that.
4 goals conceded. Well, you know, cheers. You answered the call.
Lewis Hall made his debut as well at 7-0, his brother saying on Twitter. Debut for the boyhood club. Amazing. It's some time to come on that, isn't it, Chris? 7-0 up. That's when you want to make your debut, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if it goes tits up after that, then maybe not. But thankfully it didn't, so...
Well, his dad was a professional rugby player, and so it's quite confusing that he came on sort of one try-in.
Converted try-in, yeah.
Fair play. Yep.
Obviously, Lewis Hall being a boyhood Newcastle fan, which still a lot of people find quite odd that he was in Chelsea's academy, born in Slough, but his dad is from up here, and so him and his brother were raised as Newcastle United fans, so yeah, huge moment for him, and if he can make his full debut at St James's Park against Manchester City, that would be quite the occasion for him as well.
Yeah, and we've also got Martin Dubravka, who hasn't really played much football recently. Jacob, he could be in line for a start.
Yeah, and quite a few people have sort of really... do you want to see some minutes for him? Sort of really formed affection with him naturally when he was making brilliant performances over the last 5 years or so. Making brilliant performances? Performing brilliantly over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
And while obviously they see that Pope's, you know, an excellent player, kind of did expect him to get more game time for it to have been more of a tussle. And seeing as Newcastle are in so many cup competitions this year, to have him as a form of cup keeper does make a lot of sense.
Even some of the players, Chris, as well, who've been playing, they could step up their prominence, couldn't they? We haven't talked an awful lot about Elliot Anderson, and he's been terrific this week, hasn't he? He slotted seamlessly into that midfield. It could be a chance for him to be the main man.
Yeah, I thought he played really well at Sheffield United. What I like about him is that he always looks to take the positive option with the ball, and sometimes when he's played for Newcastle so far, he hasn't got enough of those correct. He hasn't picked the correct pass, but he looks to break the line. He looks to get players in behind. And Anthony Gordon's performance owed a lot to both him and Dan Byrne down that side as well, really complimenting him. And I think it was a big week for Elliot Anderson to show that he can perform starting in the Premier League at this level, that he can be relied upon, given the injuries to both Joe Willock and Joe Linton, that he's got those minutes. And he now is very much not that young player just on the periphery of the squad. He can now be seen as a starting Premier League player for Newcastle, and yeah, I think that he could well continue in midfield, and I think that he could, under the lights at St James's Park on a Wednesday night, that's exactly the sort of atmosphere that he wants. Just needs that first goal denied cruelly at Nottingham Forest last season, but I think it's coming because the performances are definitely there.
I think sometimes just being embroiled in the club day to day, you kind of lose sight of how rapid his rise has still been. I mean, I saw a tweet a couple of days ago talking how May 2022 he's playing in League 2, and then in September 2023 it's for Champions League at the San Siro. It's how many players would have there ever been who've played from League 2 and the Champions League in the space of, what's that, 15 months, 16 months?
Yeah, there was still talk at the start of the season that he was going to get a loan, wasn't it? That he might go back out on loan again. But he's been superb. He had a great pre-season. He's come in. He's shown that he can be trusted. He's shown that he can do a job. He was wonderful on Sunday against Sheffield United. He was superb. Absolutely brilliant performances.
I think the thing about Elliot Anderson as well is just how fit he is as well. There was all stuff in pre-season about how he was Newcastle's fittest player in all of the different tests that they had. But it's you can see that out in match situations, that he physically can cope with it. He had his growth spurt last year. He looks like he's really grown it in that body now. And the ability to get up and down, the engine, the pitch. I thought the balance of the midfield looked very good. The three of them together, Sean Longstaff, Bruno Guimaraes and Elliot Anderson, complemented each other very nicely in different ways, and maybe that's a trio who will play together fairly often over the course of the next few weeks, given that Sandro Tonali's still coming in and bedding in. As I mentioned, interesting that he came on and sort of was more in the number six role before the system then changed completely. And until we see Joe Willock back, which could still be a good few weeks, then Newcastle are going to need the energy that Elliot Anderson brings.
It'll be interesting to see if Lewis Miley gets a few minutes as well, won't it, Jacob? It'd be good to see his development as well. Good to see him continue to play.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that in the summer he played well against such high-quality opposition in the United States does actually mean that you aren't too fearful against throwing him in against Man City, which you usually would be with a 17-year-old. Eddie Howe is really careful about his development, not wanting to almost give him too much too soon. But while you probably wouldn't expect him to start, there's really a place for him in the squad.
Might we see a little bit of rotation at centre-back, Chris? Could Jamal Lascelles come in?
We'd like to think that he's going to have to play some football at some point, and this would seem like the perfect opportunity to do so in terms of if you are going to rotate and give the sort of fringe players, for want of a better term, greater minutes. He is the club captain, and he is going to probably be called upon at certain points in the season, so you want him to get up to match sharpness. I mean, part of me even talking about all these changes, I'm a little bit uncomfortable because I would like to see Newcastle be prioritising the cup competitions again, but the reality is they're competing on so many fronts that Howe has to believe in his squad, he has to believe in the rotation of it and hope that in these early rounds, albeit against Man City, whatever version of their side they put out, that he put names in 11 who can deliver. That hasn't often been the case for Newcastle in recent years in cup competitions when they have made a lot of changes. So hopefully he gets that balance right and Newcastle are able to progress.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there we go. I don't know about you, but it's been some week, hasn't it? I'm absolutely knackered now.
It's quite depressing for considering it's a Monday lunchtime and I'm already broken.
Yeah, it does feel like that. It feels like that. There's an awful lot of football to be played, isn't there, Chris? There's lots going on.
Yeah, well, George is, I think his season's over now, is it? Is that him out for the season?
He's just done?
Yeah, I think so. I think he had one away trip to Milan and that's done him.
Fair play. Right then, get yourselves over to The Athletic and subscribe via theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to pay just £1 a month or $1 a month, depending where you are geographically, for 12 months and get to read all of the wonderful output from Chris, George and Jacob as well. Get in touch as well with the show. We're all on Twitter. We're pretty easy to find. And the show is at Pod on the Tyne, or email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Thanks very much, chaps, for your time. Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you very much, Taylor.
Cheers, and cheers to you, Chris Woff.
Cheers to you as well, Taylor. I'm getting withdrawal symptoms because Newcastle haven't scored in a little while.
It's, I know.
It's really disappointing, actually.
It is. It is. Right then, let's call it a day, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks a lot to all of you out there for listening. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll have a little bit more chat about that Man City game and looking ahead to the weekend against Burnley. For now, thanks very much for listening. Take care. Enjoy your week. Goodbye.
Athletic.